Start your engines.
Race fans, you are tuning into the only motorsports show in San Diego. Your host, Dave Stahl, and the racing school teacher, Brittany Sandoval, are taking you to the green flag, covering everything from your top-notch national drivers and crew chiefs right down to your local kid racers and racetracks. Strap in, it's Checkers and Wreckers on Racer Radio.
FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
This hour is brought to you by Southwest Point of Sale. If you're into, if you have a grocery store, liquor store, and you're having trouble with cashiers, well, Southwest has a great program. It's called Self-Checkout. Walmart, Home Depot, and Costco use it. Just go to southwestpos.com or call them at 800-540-2149. Mark or Jeff will come out to your business, take a look. And if your equipment fits their equipment, you're good to go for less than what you'd pay for a cash register. You could do meat and produce scales as well. These guys have been doing this since 1975. And the best thing is, if you're open, they're open. 7 day a week, 24 hour a day. That's Southwest Point of Sale. Call them, 800-540-2149. Give them a shot. Tell them you heard it right here on the radio. Also, San Diego Gear and Axle. If you have a vehicle, race car, street car, off-road truck, or just a truck in general, and you want to do some drivetrain modifications, sdgearaxle.com, 1488 Pioneer Road in El Cajon. Plus, Steve is big into drag racing, so that might not hurt either. Also, Dragonfly Auto Repair, right there on Pacific Coast Highway, 4055, new advertiser. NAPA Auto Care, AAC certified, AAA approved. Can't get any better than that. Give them a call at 619-704-2280. That's dragonflyauto.com. Hey, Brittany, how's it going?
All is well.
So what do you got for us today?
Well, hey, you know when Lars Larson contacts you personally and says, I got a pal you're probably going to want to interview. You don't even need to ask questions. That's pretty much how it went down.
Cool.
So joining us in studio to my right, we have Lars Larson, the Lars Larson, who was just recognized at both the San Diego and Anaheim Supercross. Yes, that one. So humble over there. And we have his pal, who was a motocross turned enduro rider, racer, I should say, not just rider, but racer, Chip Howell. So welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hey, Chip, how's it going?
Very good, thank you.
Mr. Alpinion, he's up in my neck of the woods. Lars, you need to grab that microphone and pull it over.
He's laid back today.
Yeah, you're just enjoying
life.
Yeah,
you two are neighbors, and Lars and I are neighbors.
So, it's a small world.
It is a small world.
So,
yes.
Chip, how many years did you ride?
I'm still racing.
Attaboy.
Oh, all right, very good.
Since 1970.
So what type of riding do you do now?
Vintage motocross.
Okay, you're with Cal VMX?
Yes.
Frank and the gang?
Mm-hmm.
I always have to tell you, I have to tell you the same story I always say when I hear you guys. They came to KUSI one time to promote a race, and I walked up to a gentleman that had a Bull Taco, and I go, wow, that thing is beautiful. He said, it looks brand new. He goes, yeah, it's a great bike. I says, how hard is it to start? He said, oh, no, it starts every single time. I says, well, it can't be a Bull Taco.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
What do you drive or ride?
Husqvarna motorcycle.
Okay, so that's why you're
Do you feel obligated? Yeah, that's it, Lars. How did you guys become friends?
Oh, man.
Do you know, like, the race?
That far back, huh?
Yeah, racing against Lars in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
Pretty much, yeah.
You've always been on Huskies?
I started, in 1970 on my first 250 Husky.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the way through till 1980, I was on Husqvarna.
Oh, okay.
Then you drifted a little?
Drifted a little bit to Yamaha a couple years.
Found out that wasn't the same.
It was a good bike.
Yamaha was
a good bike, and then I went back to Husky.
Is that the old blue one?
It was an IT, yeah.
I feel like growing up, there was one in our garage like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. So wait, did you have to race him when he was on that silver one? The illegal platinum?
No.
I
think I saw him race that when I was a novice racing.
Got it.
Way AMA races went back in the day, District 38, the novices would race in the afternoon. So if you got there early, you could watch the experts race. Mm-hmm.
See if you could pick up a tip or two?
Yeah, and I remember Lars and Billy Silverthorne going at it at Dehesa. Mm-hmm. Just like, wow. They're on 400 Huskies, and Lars had his titanium bike, and Billy was on a stock, I think, stock bike. And, man, they just put on a show.
Or so that's what he would tell you.
They put on a show, though. They were stock. Really, really fast.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Then you get out there and you go, wait a minute, how come I can't go that fast?
My 250 doesn't go up the hill like that. Throwing a roost 40 feet back, no, it doesn't do that.
Jeez. Yeah. You know, Cal VMX, I think, is one of the best things that ever happened to ex-motocross riders and guys that never were able to afford to race motocross but can get into it now.
Yeah.
Because bikes are available. The organization is very well put together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good racing environment, and also you get to hang out with, you know, your friends.
And it keeps you in shape.
And you're not taking each other out. You know, you've all had your day, so you're not out there for blood like a pro race or something.
Lars would never do that.
Out for blood?
Lars wouldn't do that.
Did you ride for blood?
Always.
Oh, even to this day? I mean, you're just
racing. No, you don't do it now, do you?
No, but by the same token, once you get up on the starting line behind the gate, the little horns, they start growing up. And you know, when the gate drops, I mean,
it's all over.
You think you're 18 again.
I felt that when we were at the Supercross just a few weeks ago. I was standing next to Lars at a lot of the starts, and I don't know if you realize you were doing this. And sorry, listeners, since you can't see me. But he kind of clenched his fists, and when they would drop the gate, he would kind of throw his arms around like, ugh, like it was. Are you aware that you were doing that?
I think so.
It was so cute. It was awesome.
It's a, you know, you like to see if you're with the gate,
the timing,
and
everything,
and so on. And
I think it's like brushing your teeth. You've been doing it so often, you don't even think twice,
but
right?
But a little more exciting, I hope.
Well, absolutely. But I think that's one of the things that probably made you as good as you are and were and still are is that consistency. You know, even though the little horns come out, everything else goes into what they call race mode, right?
Exactly.
You don't even have to think twice.
No.
Even though the tracks are different, you know, you could go whatever track it is, I think it's what you call adjust on the fly.
Yeah. I mean, it's either going to turn left or right.
And either you're going to be up or you're going to be down. One of the two.
Exactly.
By the way, how are you feeling? Because I know you had a little mishap a couple races back.
Yeah, but that world championship in the afternoon, when you're going back up the hill, it's like, it's pitch black. And once you get up there, there was people scattered all over the place, and you're trying to zigzag in between, but finally you lose your momentum, and all of a sudden, here I am
tumbling
downhill, and so I have a little tear in the rotator cuff.
Oh, ouch. So you haven't been able to ride since?
No, I haven't.
Okay, you're going to get back on it?
I'm going to go and try here pretty soon and see how it feels, because they don't want to operate on this one because there's arthritis. You know, I'm getting a little bit too old,
I guess. You're what, over 21?
Yeah,
so,
a little bit.
You
know.
So they say, because a rotator cuff does not heal by itself.
No.
It has to be stitched together. But doing that with arthritis in there, they said it's going to be a half, you know what, job.
And that could be your retirement right then and there.
Yeah,
And you're not quite ready for retirement.
No, but at the same time, the only way to really
do it right
is to replace the shoulder. And hello, at my age, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So just ride through the pain?
Yeah,
Do you know what you're going to throw your leg over?
Yeah.
When you get out next?
I don't know.
Anything?
Maybe a Husqvarna.
Anything that rolls.
Yeah.
Maybe a Husqvarna?
Most likely. Yeah. They're nice to me at the Motocross Action magazine. You know, they say, you're the oldest here, you pick.
Nice.
Nice.
Wow.
That's nice.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And you don't have to work on him anymore.
Nope. I don't even have to fill the gas.
That's wonderful.
Wow, yeah. Diva.
Come in with the limo. Come in with the limo. Yeah. Get out, get on, race, come back, get in the limo, go home.
He does usually have a driver. I've picked up on that, Lars.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yes.
Well, I think you paid your dues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you
well, it's six, if I start racing this year, it will be 65th season straight.
That's awesome.
You will.
Straight.
I have all the
straight. That's
Chip's over here going, geez, Louise.
He asked me one day, how long you been racing? And I said, since 1970. But he goes, have you raced every year?
Yeah.
I go, no, I have not raced every year.
Yeah. So he's been consistent.
Yes.
All right, let's take a quick break. You're listening to Racer Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, folks, welcome back to Racer Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
This segment is brought to you by El Cajon Ford, where nobody, absolutely nobody, treats you better than El Cajon Ford. Go to ElCajonMotors.com for all your new and used Ford products and every other car on the planet. Plus, you may not be aware, but their service department actually will work on anything in your garage. That's correct. With master technicians working on your vehicles, you'll never have to worry about going to more than one dealership. El Cajon Ford, right there at 1595 East Main Street. Go down there and tell Paul thanks a lot for sponsoring Racer Radio. All right, we got Lars Larson and Chip Howell, a couple of motorcycle folks from the days gone by. Both still racing, so that's a great... thing to see, just to go show you that one, motorcycling is still an absolute blast and you can still race. There's plenty of divisions out there, and we thank them both for giving us the entertainment from the past and the future. You got a question?
I do, when you're done.
No, go ahead.
I'm curious about this, Chip, the transition from motocross to enduros. That's two different worlds slightly.
I used to work for Husqvarna Motorcycle Distributor from 77 to 80, and I raced CMC Motocross for 10 years. And motocross just got to be kind of a grind.
Okay.
Every week, Carlsbad Saddleback. And when I was working for Husqvarna, these enduro riders would come in, Dick Burleson, A.C. Backen, and Larry Rossler, and they always had a smile on their face. And it just seemed like motocross, you know, you have to pay a gate fee to get in. You had to pay a heavy entry fee in the pro class. And if you're not winning, it got to be a grind. So I thought, I want to try this enduro stuff. I like riding all day. I ride motorcycles because I love to ride. And when you ride a 150-mile enduro, you had a good day. You've ridden quite a bit. So I transitioned into riding District 37 enduros.
All right.
Up in L.A.
Does my shirt look familiar to you?
Yep.
What can you tell our listeners? Do you have any experience with that?
Yeah. I rode Ducati Enduro. Working with the people I worked with at Husqvarna, they go, yeah, there's a Ducati Enduro. You're gonna ride that Ducati Enduro? And I go, I don't know. I was racing motocross then.
Yeah, what's a Ducati Enduro?
Yeah, what they go? Oh, it's like a family enduro down in Mexico. You know, and okay. So I sign up. I post entered late and went down there with Rick Finger and his dad in their motorhome, and it was 78, and they had 271 started and only 19 finished.
It rained,
and my three guys on my team were gone before lunch on Saturday. So I was riding to save my life because I'm a motocross guy and I didn't know where the hell I was in Ducati. But I finished, and I got 18th out of those guys. And then next year I did better. And it was real prestigious back then to win the team trophy. Malcolm's team would usually win. And we worked on that, and we had a good team. We won the team trophy in 81, I believe.
Do we remember all the names of your team?
Yeah, it was,
I'm putting you on the spot.
Rocky Tuggle, Randy Hollenbeck, and Rick Finger.
All right.
And we won the team trophy, which was awesome. And then in 82 was the last two-day 500-mile enduro, and I won that.
I was.
I won that overall.
I read that. Yeah, you won the the last 2 days. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That was on a IT465 Yamaha.
Wow. And were you smiling like the...
it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Well, it's so much difference between motocross and enduro racing. Yeah, motocross, you're in a confined track that is just over and over and over.
You can't really get lost. You can get help real quick.
But an enduro, that's a horse of another color.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And me being a motocross rider, riding an enduro that has a 24-mile-an-hour speed average, I'm thinking I need to go 24 miles an hour no matter what. And Malcolm was like, Malcolm Smith was 2 minutes behind our team, and he'd come up and pass me, and you know, I'd keep him in sight. I'm like, what? He's riding.
What's he doing?
He's early, you know? And I learned from following good riders that he's riding fast when he can, and then he takes his time through the tight stuff because he's built up a little bit of extra time, and he knows there's no check coming up. So I learned to... you know, start riding enduros that way instead of just, you can't go 24 through that stuff. So, it was tough. Takati was really tough.
Ooh, Lars has a finger up.
Yeah, he's learned.
He wants to add to this.
Well, we don't have enduros like that in Sweden. So when I came here and I came from ridden the 6 days.
Yeah, 6 days.
The 6 days enduro. And I remember the very first, it was back in Kentucky someplace. And, you know, I took off and I got to the first, you don't know where the checkpoints are. So, hey, you're going too fast.
Yeah.
You're going too fast.
What do they call that, burning?
So I slowed down. And at the third or the fourth checkpoint, I remember in my broken English, I said, well, do you want me to take off the bike and push it?
Oh, my gosh, Lars.
Well, yeah, but if you don't know.
No, I had no idea how to figure this thing
so
out.
Yeah. Did you like enduros better than motocross? Or did you care?
It's like, that is two different worlds.
Yeah.
I mean.
But I mean, if you had your choice.
Well, the reason the enduro came into play is because when the motocross season was over in Sweden, early October, then the enduro season started.
Right.
So from then till when the motocross started in April, what were you going to do?
Right. So you race year-round.
Mm-hmm. Year
Stay round. In shape. Right. Yeah. In shape.
What about you, Chip, if you had your choice between motocross and enduro? Because I know you sort of alluded to the financial load on motocross, not so much in enduro.
True. Like Lars said, it's two different disciplines completely. Right. I mean, I love riding all day and
Your discipline would probably be enduro, not taking into consideration the cost factor, but if somebody was paying your way, I guess I should say, and you had your choice to run a motocross or an enduro, you would probably take the enduro.
Yeah, at my age, yeah.
What about when you were younger?
Lars and I were talking about that out in the car. It was like, I'm happy we don't have to ride on the tracks they have now with the doubles and triples. And
can you imagine?
We rode natural terrain
tracks
and, you know, big uphills and downhills, and now they just...
Yeah, how often did you do a double or a triple?
Not back in the day.
Not with six inches of wheel travel.
No, nothing like that.
When you first started doing enduros, was it new to you? You had to change the tires, right?
Yeah.
Like the back tire. Yeah. How was that for you?
I qualified for 6 days in 81, and I never changed the tire during the qualifiers.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty gentle on the bike. I don't get flat tires. And I'm like, uh-oh. You know, you're supposed to do this in less than 4 minutes.
Oh, four. Okay.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of time to do that. So
no quick releases?
No, there's little secrets. Larry Rossler taught me about taking the tire off the IT465, put the wheel back on the bike, and then you always work away from the sprocket. So start the bike up and hold a rasp on there and grind, you know, just kind of file down that one side of the wheel you're going to be working on when you're changing your tires. It makes it a lot easier. And we ran rim pins back then. We didn't run rim locks.
Okay. Right.
And I got it where I could pull the bike up, put it on the stand, you know, do it all in 4 minutes. I could do it, and I'm like, I'm not the tire guy.
Now, did you have to take the tire off the rim?
Yeah.
You couldn't just put another tire on there, a tire and rim?
No. It's 6 days. You have to be able to change your own tires. They don't just, and everything is, back when we did it, there's a marshal watching you, everything you do. They can't
Can't you yell at him, hey, come here, help me out with this.
No.
So you have to be able to change a tire. I change a tire every night at 6 days. And right. I went through, I think, 3 front tires. And
wow.
So,
did you have any tricks, Lars, for changing tires?
I hated it with a passion.
I would, too.
Well, I wanted to bring
but
it up.
Nevertheless, there was a few little tricks. And
yeah.
When you know that you were going into the final checkpoint for the day, half a mile away from that, you stopped and let the air out of the tire and rode in like on a flat, because
right.
that way the tire came off the beads.
Yeah, yeah.
So it would make it a lot easier. The tire's sure. hot, warm, and it's off the beads, so you get it off the rim
very much quicker.
Yeah.
Things like that.
They didn't say that was against the rule?
No, you can.
They don't care.
No.
No, they don't.
What about like the navigation? You just I remember my dad had like this little scroll and he'd handwrite things and stuff like that. Well, but
in enduro, you have back then you had a roll chart.
Yeah, okay, the roll chart.
And did you put that on your bike?
It has and it has a little knob and you have probably 10 minutes of what you're looking at, and if you're planning ahead, like California enduros, they can have all different speed averages, like 12 miles an hour, 24, 36. So you want to keep that at the top, and everything has to jive when you come into a checkpoint. But if you're riding smart, you keep that up at the top. Mm-hmm. And I used to highlight mine if there's a speed change coming up. Like we're going to be going right now. We're going 24 across this desert. It's real easy, but we're going in those hills, and they're bumping it up to 36. Yeah. So that's what's called a special test. So they're going to check you in. There's going to be a check before that somewhere. They're secret.
Somewhere.
And then 3 miles are free after a checkpoint, so you can just haul and then
slow back down.
Well, look real quick at 3 miles and you're still behind. So you just still keep it pinned, and then whenever you come out of there, that's usually where they score the enduro.
So is it all electronic? Remember we saw that gentleman?
Now it is.
Would you
have preferred? Or are you glad you were old school? You didn't know better then, but
It was an art to keep time.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Dick Burleson was very good. He could run the numbers in his head while he's riding. Once you learn, I liked it, keeping time. I don't know about Lars, but
did you like it?
I never done. I never learned. I'm too stupid.
Six days you didn't have to do that.
6 days.
Enduro in Sweden was not that way.
We know
where the shakes are. Yeah. We had a time card that you have. It's 10 miles, and you got to be there in 14 minutes.
Right.
Okay. And you just hold butt.
It was nice and simple.
You just stopped at the checkpoint and waited till the clock came up on your minute. Then you rolled in, stamped your card, and off you went.
Oh, my God.
So the enduro that Chip is talking about, that's basically an entirely different ones.
Yeah.
I did a race one time with John Penton, and I mean him and Burleson, they were the kings of enduros, the American way. And I was on the minute with John Penton, and all of a sudden he stops in the woods. And I said, What's the matter? Oh, we're early, Lars. Early what? How do you know? Just following me. And we aced every damn checkpoint. It was fantastic. And I said, fantastic, but thank you, not for me.
All right, let's take a quick break. We got Scott Delosio. 28 years, Paris Auto Speedway. Gosh, there's got to be a birthday cake in there somewhere. This is Racer Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, folks, welcome back to Racer Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, this segment's brought to you by Paris Auto Speedway, 18700 Lake Paris Road in lovely Paris, California. In fact, we've got Scott Delosio on the line. It looks like they're celebrating their 28th season, and the racing is upcoming this Saturday. How you doing, Scott?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
So you get? Hey. Are you gargling? Are you getting ready for the opener?
Yeah, I thought you were going to say you're gargling because we're underwater, but that hasn't happened either yet. It's just starting to rain here.
Oh, is it?
Oh, is it now just starting to rain up in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, it's been raining in L.A., and it's just the ground just got wet here. where it's completely covered. So it's all still right. Mild, but it's within a couple hours of getting ugly.
All right. So what's on the schedule next Saturday?
Yeah, next Saturday night, another time LKQ Pick Your Part is going to present Night of Destruction to open the 28th season. Figure eight cars. We brought back the figure eight trailer race for this year. The mini stocks on the road course, demo cross, and of course the fan favorite, the double deckers.
I just had did a radio show this morning called San Diego Automotive Museum, and they had never heard of Night of Destruction. So I told them that to get their tails up there next weekend. I wasn't sure it was Night of Destruction, so I'll reach out to them and let them know, because they will be blown away when they come see it, because they couldn't believe it.
Yeah, good. Should be a good show. You know, a lot of cars, first time out, so there should be a lot of cars that weren't out there last year who haven't been torn apart yet.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Yeah, it's going to be. And folks, if you've never been, it is absolutely amazing.
I was just showing Chip the double deckers.
Can you imagine that, Chip? The guy on top steers, and the guy below is braking gas with no communication.
Amazing.
So you and Lars could do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Lars would probably want the gas pedal.
Yeah, then you guys would be on your side in turn one.
That's one of the pictures I have where it's about to tip.
Show it to Lars. Because, am I right, Scott?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun. You said in turn number one, but in double-decker racing, that's turn number four is turn number one.
Oh.
And turn number four is turn number one in an oval race. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah. It's clear as mud. Wow. Clear as mud.
The time I went up, I think there were four double-deckers, and three of them tipped, I think.
Yeah.
When we were there.
Well, that just goes to show you that there's a lot of crazy people out there.
Oh, but see, the thing about...
You don't have to be crazy, but I'm sure it helps.
Well, Scott can tell you, Night of Destruction, isn't that one of your most attended races throughout the season?
Yeah, for sure, and he's right. You know, you have to be kind of crazy to do it. We actually, before anybody can drive in the double-deckers, we have them take a test. And if you qualify in the lower end of the scores, that means you pass and you can drive them.
Not believing him.
You're so funny. And, you know, we just talked to, who did we talk to last weekend, that's all he's ever done is just Night of Destruction. He hasn't done any other form of racing, and he absolutely loves it. Who did we talk to last Saturday?
That's the one where there's the boats in the way and the barrels in the way.
Yeah, Duro Racing.
Yeah, it was Rob Malfa.
Yeah, the Duro Cross.
What a great interview, man. I'm telling you, we had a great time with him. But 28 years, are you guys doing? I mean, I guess it's not because it's the 25th or the 30th, but anything special this season?
So far, to my knowledge, no. We'll probably wait till the 30th. You know, we did the 25th anniversary season 1 year late due to COVID. So probably on the 30th, you know, Don will dream something up. I mean, we're bringing back the Oval Nationals for the first time. Ooh. We didn't have them last year. So that's coming back at the end of November. Sprint cars are back for their first night on February 24th. Mm-hmm. So that's just a couple weeks away as well.
Gosh.
And they're running, they've got a brand new sponsor, Avante Windows and Doors, sponsoring the sprint cars this year, and they have dumped a ton of money into that series for the drivers, so that's going to make it even more exciting.
Yeah, that's going to really fill the pits up, so to speak.
Yeah, hopefully so.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea.
It's like all racing, as it gets more expensive, the pits seem to get slimmer and slimmer in some classes. You know, but hopefully with this extra money up for grabs, it'll help pump them up a little bit.
Right. Well, you guys can never really judge what division's going to grow and what division's going to be affected. There was a time, Brittany races in, the dwarf cars, there was a time at Barona Speedway, it was, you know, the numbers were kind of low. Now the numbers are definitely.
When I first started, there was a B main. I had to really work hard to get into the A main every single race.
Then the B went away. Now
it's coming back.
It's coming back. So
it happens throughout racing. Yeah. And you know, all this stuff started in the late 70s when people quit building their own stuff and started buying stuff off the shelf.
Right.
And that's when racing really, the price of racing really went through the roof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whether it's chassis, engines, whatever the case may be. And then, of course, we still have issues with, you know, getting tires.
I was thinking that.
And I don't think the tire issue has been resolved yet. Do you?
I think it's a lot better than it was as far as getting quantities. Mm-hmm. The quality of tires has been really suspect the last 5 years.
Really?
So, you know, when the quantity went down, the price went up, and the quality went down. And the quality has never, hopefully this year will bring something different.
Right.
But there's been a lot of delaminating in tires that never seemed to happen as much, you know, 7-8 years ago as it does now.
Right.
So hopefully they've got that problem solved, because it's not cheap to buy, you know, tires for a sprint car anymore.
No, no. The other thing that we haven't talked about in a while is the issues with the water department.
That's all been, you know, unfortunately, when everything looked good all the way, the judges rejected the state's attempts to cancel the lawsuit 4 times. So everything looked really good, and then I think it was 8 or so days before the judge suddenly threw the lawsuit out.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't sound to me anything like that judge helped making that decision, but you know what I'm saying, it sounds like that judge helped along making that decision somehow. I mean, they were against it for so long.
Right.
And then they changed their damn mind at the last minute. Come on.
Yes, that's telling you something. Well, but it's not going to, and people need to understand, it's not going to affect the racing. It's just going to affect getting in and out of the track.
Right. Yeah. Right. And, you know, we've tried to stress that with people, and some people just, you know, they've missed that point.
Right.
The racetrack was never, never in danger of closing due to this.
Right.
What it was is just what you said. It's going to cause a pain getting in and out, which, you know, eventually is going to cost the racetrack some money in funds with people. You know, if this damn thing ever happens.
Well, there's that,
they've
too.
They've been supposed to start this for so long. How many times?
Right.
You know, how many times we heard they're going to do it, and they haven't done a darn thing yet.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, right now there's no sense. Well, at least you're stopping the financial bleed of keeping lawyers chasing this thing down. Now it's just a matter of educating the masses. You know, don't let a little traffic, you know, because once you get to the track, you get to the track. And yeah, you may have to, you know, deal with some detours and a little bit more traffic. That just means come a little bit earlier. It's not the end of the world.
You know, exactly. If there's got to be ways, you know, we can put together and advise fans on what to do, whether it's like, hey, you know, if you live in this zip code, this zip code area, you know, come out at like 2 o'clock, or that's too early, but come out like at 3:30.
Right.
You know, then, you know, another group area, come out at 4. I mean, that might help some, who knows?
Well,
I don't think, you know, I think we're gonna get around it one way or the other.
Well, and they're not doing anything to the roads on Saturday night. They're probably doing more during the day, Monday through Friday, wouldn't you say?
They're saying 24/7, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
That's what they have said.
Yeah, well, you know as well as I do, we'll wait and see how that flies.
Well, like I say, we'll wait and see if it ever gets...
If it ever flies. So the schedule's up.
Schedule's up, ParisAutoSpeedway.com, or check out our Facebook page. Okay. You know, our first sprint car night's going to have sprint cars, including the Young Guns, which this year it's the gas chassis Young Guns. The winner, champion of the series at the end of the year, is going to get a gas chassis courtesy of Ben Sexton down your way.
Yep.
It'll be the senior sprint cars. And this year, the stock cars, we're going to rotate the stock cars in and out of the sprint car shows. So the first night's going to have super stocks and street stocks.
Gotcha.
Stock car shows just have never drawn well, no matter what Don tried. So, you know, it just got to the point. It's like, you know, we're throwing money. Must have drive down the freeway and throwing money out the window. So he's going to mix them up with the sprint cars this year.
Yeah. Well, you know, and nobody looks under every stone like Don Kazarian, let me tell you. I mean, and he doesn't normally take no for an answer, and he'll figure out a way. Because it's about the fans, and there are people that like both divisions. It's just, you know, just got to keep pushing until he finds that combination, but it's out there.
Well, a lot of people don't understand this is a business.
Exactly.
Bottom line, it's a business. You know, you got a business where you're throwing money at something that's not working, what do you normally do? You stop doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and he's done that with the stock cars for decades.
Yeah.
And it just got to the point, you know, and they'll be racing in front of bigger crowds. You know, it should be when we ran the modifieds with them a couple of years ago, the guys and gals who came out and raced with the modifieds on sprint car nights, they love the racetrack because the sprint cars smooth the track out.
Yeah, there's always
so,
a positive.
You know, hopefully the stock car people are going to realize the same thing, and they're going to be happy with it.
Yep. All right, buddy. Folks, go to ParisAutoSpeedway.com. Check out the schedule. Mark your calendar and be sure you're out there this coming Saturday for Night of Destruction. Thanks,
that's
buddy.
Right.
Talk to you down the road. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, folks. Welcome back to Racer Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Segment's brought to you by Certified Car Clinic. Greg and his team can definitely take care of all your automobiles, plus all your race cars, whether a sand car, circle car, or drag car. He's got an in-house dyno. Anything he does, he can verify it. Also, if you have air conditioning and heating, you definitely want to hook up with Weather Machine, 9303 Bond Avenue in El Cajon. Go to weathermachine.net, weathermachine.net. They'll take good care of you, family-owned and operated, third generation of heating and air. When they come to your house, they don't just work on your AC. They give you a complete inspection, talking about different devices for carbon monoxide poisoning and all the other things that you would need. Very educational. Call them at 619-443-9974. All right, I'm going to let you chat with these two. I got to go downstairs and get the next guest.
Fantastic. On occasion, I bring in pictures. I think I kind of started that with you, Lars. Do you remember last time I brought in some pictures? Do you remember that?
No.
Okay, you don't have to. But at the time,
my memory is good but short.
Well, at the time, we were also talking about a BMW that you used to pull. Was it a Beamer that you pulled a car or pulled your race motorcycle around with? What'd you have? A Mercedes, a BMW.
Mercedes.
It was a Mercedes. Yeah. Okay. And you said, oh, I wish you'd had a picture. I don't know if I have a picture, but in my mind, I think I even told you that I didn't feel comfortable printing this picture because you were shirtless. But to this day, I wonder, is that your Mercedes in the background?
Yes, dear.
Oh, that is it. Okay. When you said, I wish I had a picture with the Mercedes, I might have told you on air, like, yeah, I came across one, but you were shirtless. So that's it. All
wow.
Right. Now for
you can sell anything with good advertising.
Yeah, yeah, that's you working. Do you remember what you're doing there?
That is in a little camping place outside Liège in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, in Europe, you can go to different countries.
Real quick.
Within just a few hours.
Yeah.
So after our races, if I raced over there that Saturday or Sunday, then we all drove, not all, but a lot of us drove back to this camping place.
Mm-hmm.
We washed our bikes. We fixed our bikes. We could go out and eat together. And, you know, and then came Thursday afternoon or Friday. Okay, I got to go to Germany and race, and I got to go down to Switzerland and race. Or, you know,
yeah.
We scattered.
Yeah.
And then we came back.
Oh, right on.
And that was like a home away from home,
yeah,
type of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, as I got out on the international circuits, that's where all the big guys, you know, Rolf Tiblin, Stan Lundin, Bill Nilsson, all the world champion guys, mm-hmm, you know, they were there.
Oh, nice.
So here you come, first year out on the circuit, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, you get to be with those guys. Mm-hmm. You got to know them, and you listen to them, their mm-hmm. stories, and you go out and eat with them. I mean, it was for a kid. You're in dreamland.
Pretty good,
it's
yeah.
like going to Disneyland.
Yeah. That's cool. Now, Chip, I'm not going to let you off the hook. I brought in a few pictures, and they might, you know, spur a story or two. Maybe describe to our listener one or two.
Well, the top left is my two daughters mm-hmm. on a 305 Honda Scrambler that I used to have.
You have adventures with them.
Yeah, correct? And then that motorcycle, the importance to me of a Honda 305 is that's the very ever first motorcycle I got a ride on. My best friend when we were little kids, his dad had one and took me for a ride up in Ramona and scared the hell out of me. From then on, I was hooked.
You were
I
hooked?
Was hanging on for dear life. But if you know a 305 Honda Scrambler, the sound of it, it...
Yeah, Dave's going to hopefully listen back. He loves the Scrambler, too.
Yeah, you know that bike. And then the other one is from when I was qualifying for 6 days, I won overall a 6-day qualifier in Oregon. And that's what that picture...
Which
Hallman,
one?
Hallman Racing sponsored me.
Oh.
And they did an ad in
nice ad, yes.
Cycle News.
Mm-hmm.
And the picture on the bottom left is in Italy in 1981 on the IT465. And the bottom right picture is a picture of Lars on my 250 YZ.
Do you remember
YZ.
That? I knew that about that picture. That's why I brought it. Do you remember this, Lars? You want
to
see it?
I need to see the picture.
Dave, we were just talking about a Scrambler. Is what mm-hmm. A Scrambler is what got Chip hooked. It scared the you-know-what out of him, and he says, I need more. Basically,
yeah. That was a long time ago. But a 305 Honda Scrambler, probably. If one went by right now, you'd know the sound of it.
Oh, are you kidding? I used to. Yeah. I literally commuted 100 miles a day on one of those.
Nice. Really? Wow.
In Northern California in the winter.
No. Are you still cool? Warming up from that?
Oh man, I tell you, it'd take at least good 2 hours once I got to work to get the chill out of your bone.
Lars, can you tell us? You seem like you want to
tell
us.
It's an old-timer race out in Cahia, mm-hmm. and I didn't have an old bike, and Chip was nice enough to let me use one of his.
What is it, Lars?
It's a 250 Yamaha, I believe. Yeah, it was a 250 Yamaha, yes.
You still got a 305?
Yeah.
You do?
Hey, see, he's perking up. He loves the Scrambler.
Bone stock, or?
Yeah, it's beautiful, too.
Go ahead and just rub my nose in it. What color is it?
It's a red one. It's a red
Very
one.
Rare.
They came in red, blue, or black. Most of them were black.
Well, they were silver.
Well, the tank is silver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The frame and the headlight and everything.
Okay, so the tanks are still silver even with the red frames?
Correct. Yeah.
Wasn't the red kind of a rare one?
In
production?
I believe 68, they changed to like a copper color with chrome fenders on a 68.
Do you have the collector on the pipes?
No.
Yeah, who does? It's the first thing you threw away.
Yeah, I have it, but I don't have it on there.
Oh, but you do have it.
Yeah, it came with the bike.
You know what that thing costs? If you were to buy one today?
I can't imagine.
Dude, it's stupid money.
Right.
Oh, now I know you live in Alpine. I definitely got to come
right?
see this.
He's going to be knocking on your door.
Yeah, you'll probably have me back on if you come over to the house.
You haven't ridden her in a while?
Oh, what's that? No, I haven't ridden that bike. And then I have a CL125A that looks like a baby 305.
Right. Yeah, no, I know.
Just like it.
Well, I keep looking. And all of a sudden, there'll be a 125. And the price is way less than a 305. But, yeah.
Yep.
Well, I could tell you stories that I used to do with that 305 because I thought it was invincible.
Yeah. Well, they were good bikes. Really.
But it was invincible. I did stuff with it nobody should have done with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff?
Yeah,
we'll do that at maybe at breakfast. I'll see you, Janet. And okay. I'll share the stories.
I like your style, Chip.
Yeah.
Oh, he found the water. I'm so sorry.
It's not cool.
Can I bring you back to Italy? What, are you on the street?
Yes.
I see people up on a high wall looking down at you. It looks like.
Yeah, Italy was 1981 was on the Isle of Elba, where Napoleon was exiled to.
Okay.
And I would say it's probably like 6 days on Catalina Island.
No,
it was, 200 miles the first day. Lars has ridden way more 6 days, but then the next day you ride it
backwards
the other way.
Yeah.
Day three is a new day. Day four is backwards. Day five is a new day. And then day six is a fairly short day because they need to run the final motos all day long. And, yeah, this was just on a transition from one dirt section to another on the pavement. And I think people that watch on any Sunday, they know about our helmet colors.
Oh, the blue with the white stripes?
Blue with the white stripes. And the Italians really like the Americans. When we were over there, they'd be cheering for us when we're coming by. They'd see that helmet half a mile away.
No kidding.
I got to see Lars's helmet in person. Your blue helmet with the white stripe? I'm pretty sure I saw it before you sent it up to the museum. Is it in a museum now?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which museum is it at?
Well, I have two bikes. One up there building a huge international blah, blah, blah something in Chicago. And then the other bike is at a museum in St. Louis with the Mungenest family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Talking about Elba, I was there not as a competitor. I was on the international jury. But the one day they had a little kind of a museum, and Napoleon had his things there, and I have sat, which was a no-no, but I did it anyway.
Attaboy.
I sat in Napoleon's bed.
Wow.
In his bed?
In his bed.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you weren't supposed to
Very little short bed. He was a very short man.
That's what they say. Yeah. Very short. And you're not so short.
How did you get into his bed?
Some kind of a little museum where they had things, you know, and I walk around there and, oh, that's his bed. And, you know, I kind of look around and I sat on it.
You're as bad as I am. I was in Congress one time when they were, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually in the Army, and I went and sat in the Speaker of the House's chair.
Oh.
Yeah.
And didn't realize you're not supposed to.
Well, especially not these days.
I love being naughty.
Yeah, well.
Oh, my.
Nowadays, they call that an insurrection.
Yep, but, exactly what I was
And that's
thinking.
The first thing I thought of when I seen it. I went, ooh, good thing
back?
No one. 1965.
Yeah, right? That's funny.
Different times.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, hey, it's been fun having you on.
It's been
great. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
A little bit of nostalgia, you know. That's kind of like we do a lot of nostalgia here, mainly trying to educate the masses about, you know, the writers, you know, like the Marty Tripes of the world that we've had in. And, you know, and then, of course, we got Mr. Larson. And did you, we're real close to the end of the show, but did you hear about that kid that came over from Australia?
For
the Baja.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had him on.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we actually went down to
the barbecue.
Old Highway 80 barbecue.
In a red Mustang, Lars. We went to that barbecue place.
Yeah, we went to that barbecue place.
Just rub it in.
Yeah. All right, folks. We got to hit the road. That's Racer Radio. But don't forget, we'll be back next weekend right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.